Zdačevský, vážení televizní diváci, je rusista, odborník na současné Rusko, ruskou kulturu, ruskou literaturu. Já ho znám dlouhá léta, protože byl mým kolegou do roku 2014 na Glasgow University, kde vyučoval Russian Studies, ruská studia. Od roku 2014 pracuje na univerzitě v Tromso v Norsku, daleko za polárním kruhem. Ale já bych se chtěl v dnešním rozhovoru zeptat na současnou situaci v Rusku, jestli je to možné. Budeme spolu mluvit anglicky, i když pan doktor Rogačevský mluví česky, ale vysvětluje,
že už jsem nemluvil dlouho česky, bohužel, a proto nejsem jistý, že půjde to správně, dost správně pro vás, vážení diváci, tak radši by mluvil angličtina.
Takže budeme mluvit anglicky. Profesor Rogačevský, there will be an election in Russia in the autumn. When and what does it mean?
It's going to be in roughly in mid-September, and it's going to be a parliamentary election, first and foremost, election to Duma,
but also other sorts of elections in various governorates. Governors stand for election, not everywhere, but in some regions, and so on and so forth. So it's going to be fairly comprehensive.
And who is standing and who cannot stand?
The way it's been described by the media, I don't really have much insight beyond that, is that the main contender for most seats is the United Russia Party, mm-hmm. Which is the pro-power party in Russia that has been in existence since the early 2000s, and it tends to dominate the political landscape, not only in these elections, but also in many past elections already.
Mm-hmm. So, do those elections matter at all?
They matter to those who live in Russian regions, perhaps more than to those who live in Russian centers, but because governors actually have quite a lot of power locally and budget, and they can change people's lives for better or worse.
But there wouldn't be different candidates for the United Russia Party, would they, for the governors, so that people wouldn't be choosing? How does it work? If, for instance, there is a popular governor, people in Khabarovsk can vote for him or not, or her, if the person isn't from a government approved party, do they have any choice?
There have been only a very few governors from the opposition parties, mm-hmm. from the Communist Party in the first place, of the Russian Federation, and from the liberal Democrats led by Vladimir Zhirinovsky.
Really?
Okay. Yes. So that Khabarovsk governor was, for instance, from the Zhirinovsky party.
Okay.
And what happens to them with... Previously, there were some governors who had passed in the Yabloko party, which was a sort of...
Yabloko is probably dead now.
It does exist, it's allowed to run for Duma elections, yeah, but I don't know what the success rate is going to be like. At any rate, the executive power that is really important. So presidential elections in Russia are more important than the traditionally than the Duma elections or local elections.
Because the MPs in the Duma do not actually elect Putin, the president.
No, uh-huh. Exactly.
So
the president or the vertical of power that sort of uh-huh. has most power.
So basically this election for the Duma only has importance for basically local government then, I suppose.
But we shouldn't underestimate the importance of the local government, because they are the ones who decide financial circumstances permitting where to build roads and houses and what to prioritize and what to pay more attention to. So that people who live very far from Moscow and St. Petersburg still can have a decent life.
Mm-hmm. The long and the short of it is that executive power traditionally has more clout. Therefore, one can probably say that Duma elections at all levels are less significant in a sense. But the significance could be increased if there is open competition. Whereas now we can see that some alternative candidates are not allowed to run. Mm-hmm.
What are the bases? How does it work, these mechanics? Who decides and why? Why they're not allowed to run?
There are electoral commissions mm-hmm. at all levels that monitor papers that candidates submit for registration, mm-hmm. and under various pretexts they say, no, you can't run.
Mm-hmm. So that obviously we have here this sort of spectre at the wedding, which is the case of Alexei Navalny and his organization, which has been outlawed as a terrorist organization. So is that basically an example? These people will obviously never be able to run.
This is a good example of how alternative candidates can be eliminated from competition. Mm-hmm. There are other things, like, for example, a wrong number of signatures, false signatures mm-hmm. among those who mm-hmm. have to gather them to support their claim to run as a candidate, mm-hmm. And so on and so forth.
Can I ask, what is the future of Navalny's movement in Russia? Is there any future?
I don't know if it had any future in the first place, mm-hmm. to be honest. But Navalny did a very interesting thing. His team prepared a site called Umne Golosovanie, clever mm-hmm. voting, mm-hmm. when they calculated through ways that they know more about than many others, which alternative candidate out of the list, long list of some candidates in some seats has a better chance than the power candidate, mm-hmm. The governmental mm-hmm. candidate. And then it doesn't matter what you as a voter mm-hmm. Think should be best. You're advised to vote for this alternative candidate who can actually theoretically outrun the pro-government candidate on the list. In certain cases, it did work in the previous elections. Mm-hmm. Whether it would work in these elections, I'm not sure, because I think some of the regulatory bodies have submitted a request to where this site is located, and it isn't in Russia, that it should be closed down mm-hmm. before this election. I'm not sure whether this has been pursued to... Mm-hmm. to this effect.
I was actually thinking maybe wrong, but when actually Navalny's websites were closing, were being closed by the Russian authorities, I think there was a news item that this particular website about the advising people how to vote was still functional. So I don't know whether it's the case now. But
As of today, I'm not sure, but certainly there have been made representations to the host, to the site host. Abroad, that it should be shut down.
What's the economic situation in Russia?
Well, that depends on who you're talking to. The prices went up, I think people really suffered a great deal because of COVID. And in some countries, we know that there has been financial support to those who lost their job as a result of the lockdown. As far as I know, there has been some in Russia, but not perhaps enough. On the other hand, I know that people go on holiday quite now that the restrictions have been lifted a little bit.
There are still hundreds of deaths daily in Russia.
It's true, yes, it's a very dangerous situation, but still people go on holiday within Russia, exploring Russia that they mm-hmm. haven't really seen, maybe going to the Caucasus or something, mm-hmm. or to the Russian north. You know, people who can still afford holidays, there are enough of them. Mm-hmm. It's become harder. I dare say it may not. We haven't had the figures yet, right? The reliable figures in how much production has been lost, what the exact unemployment mm-hmm. has been, and so on. The exact death rate is also open to questions.
Yes, because the statistical office, the government statistical office, has much worse numbers than the official numbers which are published weirdly daily. It's interesting. I think they have these excess deaths which are much, much higher than the Russian statistical
office. That's right. So but that presents a particular problem, who to believe, and all we can say at the moment is there is a discrepancy to look at. But the same applies to figures to do with the economy. Exact repercussions of this may not be obvious for some time yet, but I think even at the moment, if we compare it to major crises, or, for example, in the late 1990s or 2008, the world crisis and so on, it's not up there yet, as far as I can tell.
So that preempts my other question, which was basically, how was the economy doing before COVID? Was it getting worse or getting better?
It was on the up before 2014, and then the sanctions as a result of the
Crimea,
and Donbass, it went significantly down. But the latest pre-COVID figures were showing, on the basis of the official statistics, that Russia was bouncing back. And it's amazing how Russia has always been bouncing back, economically speaking, from all the crises that it has ever had.
Okay. Now, you teach at Tromsø a course about Russia today, since 1990 or 1991. In it, I think you have different periods for Putin 1, Putin 2, and Putin 3. What's the difference?
This isn't my classification. This is what it's called really in Putin studies, if we can put it that way, in Russian studies, post Yeltsin Russian studies. It's to do simply with Putin's electoral cycles, his first presidential term, second presidential term, then Medvedev's term, President Medvedev's term, and then subsequent Putin's terms in the office. So the difference, and again, this is not my point of view, but the rather general one, we can probably summarize it like this, that Putin started out as a very friendly to the West, hoping to that Russia would be accepted as an equal among the leading Western countries. Then it led to disappointment because Russia was not treated the way Putin thought it deserved. Now the relationship between the Russian government and the West has been at a very, very low point, and that's what we have at the moment with Putin 3+.
This is quite interesting. I remember Angus Roxburgh, our colleague and former BBC reporter who in Moscow, a television reporter who then went and worked for the Kremlin as an advisor about the West, and I think he's published a book about it or whatever. He told me that they kept asking him in the Kremlin, what are we supposed to do so that actually the West likes us? And he kept telling them, just observe the democratic principles. They just ignored him.
I don't know if they ignored him. I read the book. It's called, I think, The Strong Man or something like that. Maybe people who asked him for advice passed it on further.
It was decided that maybe that wasn't the way or whatever.
Well, I don't know if Russia does not observe democratic principles. That perhaps would be too strong a statement. Certainly,
but it does imprison some people.
Yes, it does. But in any case,
imprisons them for being in hospital in Germany because they poisoned that person.
One can say that, yes. But the main point is, why should Russia behave to be liked by someone? mm-hmm. someone else.
But that was the question. According to Angus Roxburgh.
Yeah.
He didn't volunteer. He didn't try to persuade the Kremlin to behave so that they would be liked, but they asked him, what should we be doing so that they would be liked?
That's why he was probably hired, but because mm-hmm. he couldn't really help them, he left. So that's the story of Angus Roxburgh. But I think in Russia, the dominating view at the moment is that we know ourselves what we're doing, and why should we please anyone? We'll just pursue the best way that we can come up with.
And finally, what will the future be in Russia?
There will be some future. It's just difficult to determine which one exactly.
Okay, you're not going to volunteer. You'll be very careful in this interview.
But what can I say? I'll just watch with bated breath, as usual. Russia is predictable in one sense, but can be very unpredictable in another. Watch this space, all I can say.
Děkuji. Děkujeme za pozornost, vážení televizní diváci. Nashledanou.
Nashledanou.